This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham, and I've got some special guests, if you want to say, guests for this particular podcast. We were able to go over Zach Peerless and I and Scott German and Jerry Ratcliffe. Boy, it was a little family affair. In addition to a couple of other reporters, we had access today to be able to talk in a group setting with the stars of ESPN College Game Day, the basketball edition, who were in town a little early for Saturday's Virginia Duke game. And of course, game day starts tomorrow with live cut-ins to SportsCenter starting about 9 o'clock. The game day show runs from 11 to 12. Of course, tomorrow night's game at 6 o'clock. And Jay Billis, who is one of our guests on the podcast today, he'll actually be calling the game as well. But we have a chance to talk with Jay Billis, also with Seth Greenberg, former Virginia Tech head basketball coach, actually former UVA assistant way back in the day, and also Reese Davis, the host of the show. And what we had a chance to do was ask them questions, of course, about, well, this game, UVA-Duke, obviously that's the topic of interest in mind directly, but also, you know, sprinkling in some questions about the UVA program, some of the individual players that have caught their attention. I know I got to ask Jay Billis his thoughts on the UVA Big Three, Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy, and DeAndre Hunter, and their NBA prospects. Jay just worked an NBA game this week as part of ESPN's sort of crossover week that they do, where they have NBA guys calling college games and college guys calling NBA games. And so I'll ask some insight there. And you'll see, we had some fun with this. The guys had some fun, and so hopefully this podcast is fun. And here we'll start with our interview with Jay Billis. Jay Billis, I mean, I hate to say I have a favorite in this group. Jay is somebody I keep up with on Twitter. He's got a lot of opinions, not just about the actual X's and O's and the games he calls, but about the NCAA's operations, more generally, more macro level kind of thing there too. He's a fun follow there, knows a lot about the game, smart guy to talk with, fun guy to talk with. So let's go to our interview with Jay Billis right here.
I'm doing something on Kyle Guy, and after the last game in Cameron, Coach Krzyzewski said that Kyle is the closest thing to J.J. Redick in the league he has seen. Not comparing him to J.J. or saying that he was J.J., but closest thing he had seen. What do you think of Kyle's three-point shooting ability, and what impresses you about him?
Well, he's a great shooter, and he doesn't just catch. He's not a catch-and-shoot guy. He does it on the move and gets into a shot about as quickly as anybody coming off a screen. He basically turns right into it and gets it up really quickly, so he's really hard to guard. And he's in great condition. He can run all day. He's a good rebounder for his size, so he can rebound his position. And he's a gamer. Like, he really competes. He's a great player.
No, you're not an expert three-point shooter.
You don't look like one either.
That's all you play.
Back in his game.
I didn't see you play.
No, and I didn't play very much. But anyways, the way Leonard Hamilton said, when we scouted him on film, said I remarked to my assistants that sometimes we don't even think he's looking at the basket when he goes up.
He knows where it is.
True. But how uncommon is that for a guy to be able to twist his body and shoot it in the air?
Well, it's not common. I mean, it's happened before. There have been a lot of great shooters, but he's extraordinary. He's really, really very, very talented, and he's just got an aptitude for it, and has worked really hard on it. But it's just like a lot of guys play golf, not a lot of guys hit it like Tiger. You can shoot it.
You're getting pretty familiar with Charlottesville now. You've been back here. You know, it's almost becoming a yearly thing. What's impressed you so much at how Bennett's been able to establish this program as a place that College Game Day wants to be in, one of the top programs in 9 years?
Well, they win. We go places that win because those are the highest rated games. People want to see the winning team. So. The last 5-6 years, they've been as good as anybody and as consistent as anybody. And they're hard to play against. They don't change game to game. They're the same all the time. And it's hard to remain. A lot of teams are very, very good, and they can play great. Virginia's consistent at the highest level, and that's the hardest thing, is to be consistent. I mean, they, you know, they lost one game this year. They only lost one ACC game last year out of, I think, 20, right? So that's an extraordinary run, and that's not an accident.
How much are you looking forward to round two between these two teams and what these two coaches do and kind of the adjustments and stuff like
that? I like watching the players. I don't watch coaches very much. Like the game plans and all that stuff, you kind of know what they're going to do. It's just what, you know, what's going to wind up winning the day, who's going to be able to make more shots, and you know, who's going to make more plays. I think even one of the coaches had said, they knew what was coming on an out of bounds play. They just couldn't stop it. And Tony runs that little elevator screen thing for Kyle Guy. He came right through it and nailed a three to keep key time late in the game. You may know what's coming, but you gotta stop it. And these guys know each other really well. A lot of the teams in the league run the same stuff year after year after year. So it's not that's not the challenge. The challenge is you got really, really good players running this, and you gotta be able to deal with it.
From your perspective, from that national perspective, just how big of a matchup is this?
I don't think it's national, local, or regional. It's two top five teams playing against each other. And last time they played, it was one of the highest rated games we've had in years. And this will be the same. You got two really good programs, and it delivers every time. It's always a close game, and it's always a good battle. It's a good contrast in styles. You know, one team plays really fast, the other team plays really slow. And how they like that. The last game, I was surprised it got to, I think it was 72-70. It was the first time they got into 70 in that game. When these two teams played, so it was that was a fun game to watch.
So how do you see the rematch? This time Trey Jones will play for Duke.
I think it'll be very similar in pace. It'll be around 70, high 60s, low 70s. I think the issue will be, can Trey Jones put a little more pressure on the Virginia ball handlers? And then is Virginia going to shoot a better percentage than they did from three? They were 3 of 17 last time, which is unusual, but both teams shot over 50%. They're both very good offensively. But the last game wound up becoming an isolation game, frankly. So both teams isolated and wound up, taking you off the dribble. And I didn't really anticipate that. We'll see what happens in this one. My guess is it won't be quite the same.
You worked the broadcast of the Milwaukee and Washington game the other night. Malcolm Brogdon, obviously, a lot of discussion about him.
Talked to him quite a bit.
He did, yeah. A lot of the attention on the Duke players, obviously, for lots of good reasons, their NBA potential. Virginia's got some guys who might get a look at the next level. Your thoughts after coming back from doing the NBA game as to those three players for Virginia?
It had nothing to do with being in Milwaukee. I mean, I've said before, and it's not, I'm not alone in this. DeAndre Hunter is going to be a first-round draft pick when he comes out, and both Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome will play in the NBA. They're NBA players. I think people get all wrapped up in stats sometimes, and I'm not saying they shouldn't. That's fine. But Mariel Shayok played here and averaged 8 points a game. He's leading the Big 12 in scoring right now. Just because you play a role on one team, that doesn't mean that's who you are. And a lot of people look at it that way. They say, well, that guy only averages 8-9 points a game. Well, look at him now. He's playing somewhere else, and they play a different style. So when these guys get out there, people know what the NBA knows what they're capable of doing. And same thing with guys like Joe Harris, Malcolm Brogdon, all that, Justin Anderson. They know.
Plan on taking some time to meet Grant Kersey.
To what?
To meet Grant Kersey.
I couldn't meet Grant Kersey because he had too many media around him, and he's got his own security guy. So it's too big of a deal. Yeah. Rightfully so.
You've been around the game for a while, and you've seen.
Now you call me old.
You can't shoot threes, and you're old.
Well, I'm older. Like I said, I covered some of your games, but have you run into a guy like Zion anywhere?
No. There's never been a guy like him to play at East Coast. There are two guys I've seen lately that you've just never seen before. Yes. One is Giannis in Milwaukee, and the other is Zion. Now, it doesn't mean that Zion's the best player I've ever seen, because he's not. I've seen better players and played against better players. But he's unique. 280, can move like a ballerina, doesn't run people over. His lateral explosiveness is impressive is, you know, the way he gets off the floor, his second jump, the way he can finish. It's crazy. And his efficiency rating is, it's breaking the scale. They even had to modify the vertical leap measurement device because he outjumped him. There's never been anybody like him that has played this game.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
Good to see you guys.
Thank you. Good stuff there with Jay Billis. Now let's go and we'll talk with Seth Greenberg. Now, okay, so I said Jay Billis was my favorite, and now I'm going to say Seth Greenberg's my favorite, but they're actually both favorites. I love talking with Seth, and Zach Peerless noted this to me. We rode over and back to the event today, and he said, you know, of the guys that we got a chance to talk with, Seth Greenberg was the one that really caught his attention the most because, you know, in a TV setting, and I do some TV work too, I do game work and I do baseball game work a lot. There's a lot of time for downtime in between pitches to talk about things. So you're not quite competing for oxygen the way you are when you're one of four people on a set in a 60-minute show, which actually you take the 18 minutes commercials out, you're 42 minutes. You got a lot of highlights. You got all this other stuff. You know, you're really competing for the airtime there. And Seth, you know, you'll hear in this interview, it's about 13 minutes or so, you'll hear Seth. I mean, you really hear a lot of the coach, the old coach, come out when you talk with Seth here about this game, the Virginia Duke game, and the Virginia strategies in particular. That was the focal point of our media today. But you get to hear the coach kind of go in depth. He does really, really well in this setting. And as Zach noted that, and I'm just kind of passing his words along, but I do agree that Seth Greenberg always impresses in these settings. And so let's talk with Seth Greenberg here on the podcast.
It's going to be an interesting game. Obviously, Duke's going to be different with Trey. And, we don't know what's going on with Ty yet, so that'll be a big factor. How Virginia handles two things that Trey brings to the table for Duke is obviously his defensive pressure. He doesn't defend, he disrupts, and he kind of pushes you out one step further, which is so important to the Duke defense. And then the other thing is, in transition, his ability to advance pass. R.J. Barrett didn't have anyone to throw the ball ahead to. Now, all of a sudden, Trey's advanced pass the ball to Zion, passing the ball to R.J. And that's got to be a concern. I mean, I went back and watched the first game a couple of times, and there were a couple of baskets that, Duke scored on made shots in transition. And obviously, I'm sure it made Tony cringe. And there were also a couple of drives where guys didn't shrink and Zion and RJ got right to the middle of the floor. And you just can't let those things happen against Duke. I mean, look, they're a 30% three-point shooting team. That's who they are. Now, they're better with Trey Jones on the court. I mean, they're a 34% shooting team with him on the court. But still, you can't let them beat you on second shots, turnovers, and straight line drives. And I'm sure that's – I just actually looked out on the floor for practice, and they've got the pack line down even the day before a game. So, you're going to see that thing shrunk up pretty good. But they got to set their defense.
How did you enjoy that first game between those two teams?
I enjoyed it because in a lot of ways it's a chess match. I thought it was interesting. I don't look at the game as a fan. I look at the game as kind of what I would do. So what I thought Duke was going to do was keep Barron and Williamson right where they needed to be and play Goldwire and just only change one position as opposed to changing three. I was wrong on that one, but it was interesting is that obviously all the switching Duke did, I thought Tony did a really good job of creating the matchup he wanted and attacking the matchup, which I thought was really good. And on the other end, I was surprised all the switching Virginia did. Like, there were a couple of plays where Kie got switched on to R.J. Barrett on that little brush block fake dribble handoff, and he just took him right to the glass. I can't imagine they're going to do that. I would think if Kie comes in the game, he's going to guard Trey, and they're not going to switch 2, 3, or 4. Obviously, it still puts a lot of pressure on either Kyle. I would think Kyle would guard Reddish, and Ty would end up guarding R.J., but I'm not sure how much if they're going to switch as much. as you watch the game unfold, there are so many vivid plays that stick out in your mind. Like, I'm sitting there looking at the game through the prism, say, like Tony, and there were certain plays that stuck out in my mind. Like the drive performance to go when Barrett goes right to the basket and Ty Jerome reaches. And that's a play that's all out of character. He can say his arm is pulled. That play's out of character. You're funneling the ball back to the middle. You're not getting the court on the guy's side. And you're thinking the inside screen where Braxton Key's on the ball and he's jumping up and down on the inbounds play, but he's outside. And Zions gets the screen and seals back and gets that layup. All Braxton had to do is take away the inside. I mean, it was defensible just by the guy on the ball just taking away the lane. So, I mean, there were probably a dozen plays to me in that game that I looked at and said, all right, we got to clean this up. And I'm sure that's what Coach Penn is doing right now.
Virginia shot their worst from the three-point line in that game. Can they win this game without...
No, they're going to have to... I mean, Duke gets three-point plays doing fashion. A week ago, they had 32 between Barrett and Williams. And it's more than that now. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, Kyle just didn't shoot the ball. You got to give them credit in the length. Even the one that Zion blocked that came right back in his hands, that was a wide-open three. The game before against Virginia Tech, he made every shot. To me, Virginia last week looked tired, and rightfully so. I mean, they looked tired. They didn't. They weren't as good with the ball. They turned it over at a higher percentage rate. They didn't cut as hard. They didn't screen as well. I read that Tony gave them 2 days off. And, you know, they've got to have good legs. You know, they got a tough stretch coming up. This is hard. I think they've got to make 8 threes in this game. That's my gut feeling.
You overlap coaching with Tony, and now you've been here a few times, you know, with College Game Day.
They love me.
What have you been impressed with in terms of Tony growing this program to where it's gotten to in the past couple of years?
You mean it wasn't growing when we were winning? No, he's so good. The thing that impresses me is how consistent he is in his approach. He's the same guy in a disappointing loss to UMBC as he is in a great win against Duke and winning an ACC championship. And I think the consistency of how his approach and his consistency of how he communicates with his team and coaches his team is the reason that you see the product you see. He's a phenomenal teacher, terrific tactician, but he also, you can be all those things if you're not a great communicator. And I think the other thing is he understands exactly who he is and how he wins, and he's not going to deviate. He's not going to take any shortcuts in the kind of guys he wants in his program. And he's going to develop the guys he has to get him to play the way he wants them to play. And, I look at what Tony's done, what Jay Wright's done, Mike Bray to an extent. And I'm totally on the other side of all the people that say the style of play, you can't win a championship, because they won a bunch of ACC championships. And if you can win ACC championship, you can win national championship. But the pace is, there are fewer possessions, but Villanova, people forget, like, Villanova won a championship 2 years ago playing the exact same pace. Now, this year Villanova's playing at about the same pace. Last year they were like 250 in adjusted tempo. So like all that, people are just finding a reason why they haven't had that breakthrough. But they said the same things about Jay Wright, and anyone championships do it in 3 years. So I mean, it's, there's a lot of guys that have never called a timeout that think they have. They think it's a lot easier than it is. It's hard, but the consistency of their program. How many league losses do they have in their last like 20 something?
Two last 2 years.
Why? They're playing teams that are winning championships and competing for championships. If the system's good enough to beat those teams, and the system's good enough to win a national championship, it's just really hard to win those 6 games.
So how do you see the rematch now with Duke having Trey Jones this time around?
Yeah, they got to deal with Trey's pressure. I mean, they can't let Trey disrupt, because he doesn't defend, he disrupts. He pushes you out of full step, which enables all those guys off the ball to get up the line and deny. and forces those catches a step further out. So those guys coming off those the sides action, they're going to have to work that much harder. They're going to have to be stronger. And they've got to meet their passes. I'm not sure Mike, I'd be surprised if Mike switches as much as he did with Trey in the game as with him not in the game. Because they were more equal 6-7, excluding Bolden. And they just got to Duke's real simple. Take care of the basketball, keep them off the glass, and set your defense. If they can do that, they're going to have a chance to win. If they can't do any one of those three things, then they're not going to win. It's really the way it is. I mean, Duke scores 24 points, I think, off their defense. The big thing is you can't commit those live ball turnovers. You just keep doing what you can. You got to run the ball in your hands and meet your passes. You've got to be strong in the ball. You've got to work extra hard to catch it where you want to catch it. Because eventually you're going to get them to guard a good portion of the floor, and that's the opportunity you can, you know, curl a screen or get in the lane. You just got to take advantage of that.
How do you keep this, as a coach, how do you keep this kind of game in context? You at Virginia Tech, you beat Duke in a big game, and then you got to play afterwards. You got a whole – you got other games.
Boston College. Thanks. Appreciate
it. Oh, well,
that.
Yeah. So how do you keep your –
the hardest thing is, just using that game. We played, I think back then it was an 8 or 9 o'clock college game, big game. And then we had to turn around and play BC on Monday at 7. And, you know, it was really hard. We were emotionally, physically, and mentally spent. We scored the first 6 points in a game the next time. And then Reggie Jackson beat us by 100. And, I felt bad for our guys because they wanted to play well. And they were emotionally bankrupt. Tony's got such a good approach. This is our next game. And this is a good barometer. This is a good, this is kind of a check of where we are in this moment in time. We're past the midterms. Mm-hmm. We're getting ready for the winter final. So, I think their approach is obviously never get too high, never get too low, but compete against yourself. And I think he's got and their team plays that way. They don't play overly emotionally. I'd say eliminate Kyle. It's probably never the one that gets too high or too low. They just play. And I think that's a good one. I think that's advantageous when you're in this stage of the season, and they're better off than maybe say Carolina Duke, because backloaded, they're not as backloaded as they got Louisville twice, I think, but Louisville twice and they go to Virginia Tech, but they don't have the Duke Carolina game two times coming up, and it's not as backloaded as others. So this is a tough week. It's good that they had some time off, and it's always good to be able to unplug, plug back in, and reboot.
That's where that game at Cameron, Mike said that Kyle was the closest thing to J.J. Redick that's been in the league since.
Not as strong.
Yeah, he wasn't really comparing as equal, but what do you like about Kyle as a three-point shooter?
I like him as a basketball player. To be a three-point shooter, you got to be able to use screens. You got to be able to get open. You got to be able to get behind the ball, shot ready. You got to be able to, his ability to elevate. He does a really good job changing speeds. Obviously, he does a really good job of reading those screen situations. And he's gotten better throwing the pocket pass, which is important because everyone shows and extends on it. The thing about what he's doing within the style of that they play, and everyone knowing what he's going to be doing, is pretty phenomenal. I did think last week he looked tired. I think maybe that last Duke game kind of took its toll on him. You go Duke, Virginia Tech, Duke, boop boop, and there's still, this emotional. There's so many things to go into this that people don't take into consideration. I used the Gerald Vick situation, right? He's having this really, really good year now. Obviously, Kansas was struggling a bit, but no one takes into consideration. All of a sudden, the kid's mom has to call and say, "You need to come home. I need you." Well, those type of things happen all the time during the course of the season. Maybe not to that extent, but there are things. These are kids that have families, that have things going on in their lives, whether it's with a girlfriend, a mom, whatever, that impact and take a toll on individuals and your team. 99.9 of them never come across you guys. But the coaching staff is dealing with it on a daily basis, and you know, it's hard on these kids. It's great. I mean, the experiences they have are great, but I think too many times we think they almost need to be robotic. They're not robots. They're 19 and 20 year old guys that are going through a lot of the same things every other 19 and 20 year old that are going on this campus, except they play in front of 17,000 people in JPJ and you know on our national TV, and they have even more celebrity and more of a microscope. But the issues are no different for them than they are for most any other person from their background. And sometimes we don't take that into consideration, and it's not fair.
Thank you. I've got to set the scene now. That was Seth Greenberg. So we've talked to Seth, we've talked to Jay Billis, and now we didn't get to talk to Jay Williams today. Jay, I can't believe it. He loves cameras, he loves microphones, and just didn't get to work out today that he could come back and talk with us in the media room. So the last guy we talked with is Reese Davis. And, you know, Reese Davis, I've said this before, maybe I've written this before, I'm not sure if I've said this on a podcast, but you know, when Reese Davis comes in on a Friday before a game day, and this is the fourth time now that we've had a game day at Virginia in the last 5 years, and so it feels like Reese is an old pal. He just, hey, Reese, how's it going? And but he comes in a room, you know, the when you see a guy on TV, they're wearing a three-piece suit. It's Natalie tailored. It's awesome-looking stuff. That's the TV view. Reese comes in on Friday before a game, and he looks – Scott German said this. You'd walk by him on the street, you wouldn't necessarily recognize him. Then he talks. This is what Zach Pirlo said. Boy, he's always talking in that TV voice. It's almost like you're hearing the game day guy. And Zach even said, I had to when I was asking him questions, I had to kind of take myself away from the fact that I'm not on the set of game day with him, because that's how he comes across. He carries that with him. So even though he doesn't look the part on a Friday before a game, he's in there in jeans and a sweater and a jacket. He's very much still the guy. And it's fun talking with Reese too. For me, you know, I'm not anywhere near that level. Probably never will be. Certainly in the ESPN ladder, I do ESPN3 baseball games, VMI primarily. Get to do a football game every once in a while. So I'm in soccer. I'm so far down that ladder, but. You know, I do play-by-play, and so for me, you know, and Reese is a play-by-play guy as well, an old-time play-by-play guy. He did the UVA-NC State game not too long ago, the one-point win for UVA in overtime in Raleigh. And so he does that. He does the game day. You know, Seth Greenberg was a coach, Jay Billis player. You know, Reese comes at it from sort of a similar perspective I do, you know, from that more, okay, I'm an outsider, but I'm a professional and that kind of perspective. So it's fun to talk with Reese as well. All that set up for now, let's talk to Reese Davis.
Yeah, man, let's do it. Whatever you guys want to ask. I know Seth and Jay Will and Billis, they you know, Bill's talking circles. I'll answer your question.
You're becoming pretty familiar with Charlottesville. What's impressed you with how this program's grown, you know, over the, you know, 9 years that Tony Bennett's been here?
Consistency's hard. And a lot of places can put together good teams. I think it's really difficult to put together a great program, and that's what Tony's done. You know, they lose guys, they develop other players to be ready to step in and play their style and system. And you know, I've said this several times. I called the game against NC State, and they didn't play up to their typical standard. At the same time, the overwhelming majority of teams in the country, even the really good teams at the top, lose when it's like that, but they didn't. And I think that speaks to the culture and their commitment to excellence and all those things. And, you know, the consistency, I think, is the hardest thing, because complacency is the enemy of great, and they never allow themselves to get complacent.
What did you take away from that first game between these two a couple of weeks ago?
At the risk of dampening the hope for Virginia, I discovered that there are a lot of individuals who can play a pack line style of defense and keep Zion Williamson out of the paint, and they all play in the NBA. That's a problem. Yeah. You know, I think just the fact that sometimes you can be really good schematically, and if a guy has a gargantuan physical advantage, he can impose that will. It doesn't mean he will every time, but he can at times. And I thought that that was really the big difference in the game. That, and obviously neither team shot the ball well from three, which is sort of standard operating procedure for Duke, and not necessarily what Virginia typically does. So I think if, you know, assuming, I haven't heard for sure whether Ty's going to be able to play, but if he's able to play and healthy and all of that, I would expect that Virginia shoots the ball a little bit better, and they'll need to, because I don't think that they're going to be able to, no matter how good they are defensively, they're not going to be able to keep those guys from getting some shots that they want, because they're physically, especially Zion, yeah, they're physically imposing. It's just the way it is. So they'll have to compensate for that in different ways, which they're fully capable of doing.
You've had a three-point or a half-court shot every time here when you've been here for game day. How exciting is that? And then how do you top that when you've had three?
How about 4-for-4? I mean, that's, you know, State Farm is going broke coming to Charlottesville. So I tell them it's worth a lot more money to them every time somebody makes the shot. And then they whine about giving away. Then, no, they don't. They're very generous. I'm kidding. But I do joke with one of the guys who has been with us since State Farm started sponsorship. He'll joke when we've had a few winners in a row and say, "You're giving away all my money." I'm like, "John, you know how much money this is worth to you?" And he goes, "Yeah, I know." You know, but they love it. They've been a great title sponsor. I think it's been great fun. And hopefully Virginia can keep the streak alive. You know, we've never had a winner at Kentucky. And I think we've been to Kentucky twice as many times as we've been to Virginia. Virginia hasn't missed. So maybe if they hit one from half court, that'll be a good omen for the three-point shooting against Duke on Saturday night.
How much pressure is going to be on the kid who is out there tomorrow?
A lot, right? You know, we were talking, someone brought up in the meeting earlier, what are the odds that they do it again? Are they the same as every week, you know, just because we're here? But I do think there might be a little mental pressure on the guy to continue going. By the same token, you know, it's a proven fact in baseball, scientifically, averages go up if you see the guy in front of you get a hit. Now, that may be because the pitcher's not throwing his best stuff. But, you know, they've seen winners here, so maybe that'll give the shooter some confidence and inspire him on Saturday morning.
Trey Jones didn't play the first time these two teams play. How do you see the rematch then with him?
It's a big deal. I mean, their shooting percentages both inside and behind the arc are much higher when he's on there. He's as good an on-ball defender as there is in the country, maybe the best. I think some of my colleagues would characterize him as the best. He changes a lot of what they do. Now, they're good without him, obviously, but they're better with him. And you know, he's a terrific player and leader, and he makes everything easier on both ends of the floor for them. So I think that makes the challenge even greater for Virginia. But again, Virginia, you know, Duke's a good defensive team, better defensive team than it was last year. But Virginia missed shots. I think they shot, what, 2 of 9 on uncontested threes? That's not typical. You know, they're going to hit those. So I think while it certainly is a bigger challenge with Trey on the floor and with Duke being at full strength, that at the same time, that I think you can expect a little bit better offensive performance from Virginia on Saturday night.
I don't know how you guys do it, if you have like a production dinner or a production meeting or something to get ready for the game, but how fun are those with the three guys you work with, and how serious are those when you get down the brass tacks?
Depends on the subject matter, I think, is the best way. First of all, I mean, these guys are tremendous teammates. They're all unselfish. They're all about the good of the show. You know, Billis and I have been together from the start of the show 15 years ago, and then we worked in studio together, you know, 4 or 5 years before that. So we've got a pretty long history, and now we're in our fifth year with Seth and Jay Will being with us, and you know, I think that we have a great bond and a great chemistry. We've got a tremendous producer, Aaron Katzman, who, you know, you've got to have everybody on the team pulling together with a similar vision. Doesn't mean that your ideas or perspectives are always the same. So sometimes we will debate and discuss, and sometimes those things can get pretty serious. But I would say for the most part that there's a lot of chop busting that goes on in those meetings. A thin skin doesn't play well in this room. You better be ready for everybody to come at you. So, but that's part of what makes it fun, and it's all based and founded in respect that we all have for one another.
Good,
Reese.
So that's Reese Davis, and setting more scene here as we're wrapping up our podcast. All this took place in the media room of the John Paul Jones Arena, and you know, it's an interesting setting because literally maybe 50 feet from us was the tunnel to the floor. They had curtains around it, so we couldn't watch practice getting ready to start. I will say, and this is oblique as I can be, I saw something I shouldn't have seen, and you're going to like it tomorrow when you see it. That's all I can say. On top of the fact that we got to see on our way out the door, we got to see some practice. You're going to like what we saw. That's all I can say. That said, also in this media room, so multi-purpose, obviously. It's the room that when we go to a game before the game where, you know, we eat dinner in there, lunch or dinner in there, as the case may be. After a game, then it turns into the place where you interview the coaches after a game. Well, today, in addition to it hosting the ESPN folks and us ink-stained wretches, and I guess what do you call TV reporters? Damon Dillman was there. Marty Hedloff from Channel 29 was there. They're not ink-stained, but and they don't really have videotape anymore. It's all digital. Anyway, they were there too. And it was great catching up with those guys as well. There was also – so around 3 o'clock, we're waiting for the last guy to come in, resave us, the last guy to come in. And a nice lady comes in and says, are you guys using this room? Well, yes, we are. Are we supposed to be? Basically was the answer. I think Jerry Radcliffe spoke for our group to say, you know, yeah, we're here. Well, she said, because I'm supposed to be teaching a class here. Really? what kind of class? Sports broadcasting. So the sports broadcasting folks were having their class a few feet away from us while we're interviewing Reese Davis. And then Reese went over and spoke to the group for a while. We were still waiting to find out if Jay Williams could come and talk to us. It turns out that, you know, he was caught up in something, not able to get away. But we waited for about 10 minutes. So Reese went over, and it was great to see. You know, here you got the star of game day, you know, an ESPN top flight, top level play-by-play guy. And he went over and spoke for 10 minutes with his group. You know, he didn't ask me. I'm a sports broadcaster. But, you know, I'm not Reese Davis. But, no, I'm kidding there, of course. I love the fact that Reese went over and spoke to the group. I thought it was just a neat little thing to share that, you know, it's – you know, when we first walked up to the loading dock area of JPJ today, you know, there's all this – there's like three trucks out back full of ESPN stuff. There's the big game day with all the writing you've seen. You know, I think Jerry Ratcliffe's website had a story about how they were, you know, doing a community event last night. There was that there, but there were, you know, we go in this service entrance all the time. You know, we are the, you know, when you're media, you go in through the security area and you get checked in, all that kind of stuff. And so we're used to seeing the bowels of JPJ and we're used to seeing all the equipment getting set up. I actually walked in with Jerry Radcliffe and Zach Peerless, and Jerry said, you know, wow, there's so much more stuff here. It's like having a concert tomorrow night or something. Are we sure Mick Jagger's not going to be here? You know, it's this is people who see this all the time. I mean, every game we go to is televised. But the level of broadcast that it takes to put on game day apparently is a lot more than it is for your normal run of the mill. So. It was interesting to see all that going on behind the scenes. And then again, I got to reinforce, being as vague as I can be, you know, we saw something and you're going to like it tomorrow. So some good news there, but that's all I can say because I don't want to give away anything. I don't want to give away too much. I just kind of want to hint to it and see who's paying attention. So our thanks to ESPN for allowing us the opportunity to, you know, get some time with Reese Davis, with Jay Billis, with Seth Greenberg. Our thanks to those gents as well for giving us the time and answering our silly questions about basketball. And, of course, tomorrow, the game day broadcast. Again, the broadcast itself is from 11 to 12. The folks will get there. I mean, I'm sure the kids will be getting there. They're lining up tonight, overnight, to get those prime spots, you know, camera weld areas. They start cutting in from SportsCenter during the 9 o'clock hour, I believe. I don't think they do the 8 o'clock hour, but the 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock hour, you'll see cut-ins from JPJ. It'll be loud. It'll be obnoxious. It'll be everything. It'll be energetic. And then you have to bottle that and save it for 6 hours because the game's at 6 o'clock. That's to come. So boy, what a fun day coming up in Charlottesville. If you can't be a part, this is, I'll say this kind of as we're closing out here. If you can't be a part of the game, because, you know, if you've looked at StubHub or SeatGeek or any of the apps, just your own Facebook feed, Laurel Bennett, Tony Bennett's wife, was asking about ticket availability. So if she's having to ask, these are hard tickets to get. If you don't have a ticket for tomorrow night, you don't want to have to sell a vital organ. Game day's free. Get there, go have fun. It's a kid will make a half court shot at the end to for $19,000. It always happens. Reese Davis, you heard, say, we're 3-for-3, and they've been to Kentucky 7 or 8 times, and Kentucky has yet to win one. So no pressure on that kid tomorrow. If you're listening and you happen to get your name picked out, no pressure on you, but you got to make the shot. It's a fun time, and then you can head back home, maybe get something to eat in Charlottesville, head back home, and settle down for what will be a great game between two heavyweight teams, both at full strength. And then after the game, so we'll live blog during the game. After the game, we have everything you can imagine and more, breaking things down. So now that I've said all that, it's time to get ready for UVA and Duke. And I'm as excited as you are. Thank you for listening. Wahoo! Wah.